Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
That pass is picked, intercepted by Van Ginkel. Still on his feet, inside the five, and it will be first and goal, Miami.
Mills throws up in the air, and intercepted by Eddie Jackson. It is a touchback as Jackson comes up with his 12th career INT.
Allen, football is stripped.
Texans able to recover. It was Bradley Chubb coming around the blind side and Laramie Tunsil, the one-time Dolphin, with a recovery.
Second down and six. We head toward the 10-minute mark here in the fourth quarter. High formation, Mills. He's pressured, got him coming. Gets speed. He lost it. And the ball is recovered inside the 21-yard line. Let's see who comes out of the pile with it.
Allen, born and raised in Scottsdale, Arizona. Started his collegiate career at Texas A&M and the University of Houston. Looking for some more late game magic. Wobbly pass, and it is picked.
Starting to rain at Soldier Field on third and one. Mills, pass deflected, intercepted. Roquan Smith, and Mills makes the tackle.
Guys, we want to go down this road. We're not going anywhere with this, all right?
He's Blank on Branham. Brendan's best work, putting together that piece, this or that, Kyle Allen, Davis Mills, who cares? Houston Texans still very bad. I'm thankful for the other 31 teams in the NFL. I'm thankful for the Red Zone Channel, because I'm not thankful for the Houston Texans. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving weekend, great Thanksgiving. Houston Texans only lost by 15 yesterday. It's a two-possession game. Strong second half showing.
So if you did what you were basically implying that a lot of people should have done in their right mind, which was turn that off and just check the score, if you just saw the score, you would say, oh, they got beat, but it wasn't that bad. But if you were a glutton for punishment and watched the entire game and knew they were down basically 30 to nothing at the half and realized what an ass kicking it was, what kept going through my head was Nick Caserio sitting somewhere in hiding, because he hasn't really addressed the media now in about 2 weeks, and going, you thought it was bad with Davis Mills? Here, hold my beer. Let me show you Kyle Allen at the helm of the Houston Texans. This is how bad it could be. It was awful. It was just, you're right, it was unwatchable. Obviously, from Lovie's perspective, it was unspeakable. And when he did try and speak, he once again gave you the signs of a coach that is cracking because of the way he cannot even handle the media now. It's like the walls are crumbling around them on a weekly basis, and it's getting worse.
Yeah, I watched every snap. Maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but I just wanted to see it. This is the worst Houston Texans team ever, right? Like, as I was watching every snap, you can allow your mind to go places because it's not pleasant. You want to think about anything else. And this is a team that, look, they had their tie at the start of the year. They picked up a win pretty early. They're 1-9-1. They have the worst record in the NFL. It doesn't seem like there's another win on the horizon. It doesn't, like, them winning a game right now seems like it would take a miracle. And I was starting to look at, like, other teams in franchise history that you can compare this to. I don't think that the Texans have had a worse team. The expansion team even won 4 games and had, like, a decent defense, you know. They had a 2-win season back in 2013. That was the year where Kubiak passed out. Case Keenum came in, threw a bunch of touchdowns, but they couldn't win a whole lot of football games. Watching this team, it's the worst that it's ever been in the franchise history. The 21 years of the Houston Texans, this is the one in 21 that is the absolute worst.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a discussion you don't want to have, but it's a pretty good discussion to have because there's very few that fill the multiple choice answers that you could possibly select from as you look at this team. You thought after what you saw last year, hey, it's not going to be a, you know, monumentally a better team this year, but you should see progress. And then the guys that we were banking on seeing progress from, including the guy that looked like one of the best offensive rookies in the league in Pierce, and some of the other guys that we saw that Nick Caserio drafted, started falling off. You know, the fact that Petrie, who started out so hot, started to slip up. The fact that they're focusing more on Pierce. The fact that You're seeing Stingley play more zone than man-to-man, and now he's hurt. You're seeing Kenyon Green get benched, and you're going, yikes. Like, this is what we were holding out our hope for and building for the future with, and now we can't even look forward to watching them because they're not playing the way they were at the start of the season.
Yeah, I just don't see another team in franchise. Like, last year's team, you should be better than last year's team. We thought that the Texans were going to be better. Another year of Davis Mills, except Davis Mills has went backwards, which I think is a bad sign for Pep Hamilton. They might have downgraded at the quarterback position going to Kyle Allen. Who, like, people are having that conversation today. Oh, Kyle Allen's better than Davis Mills. Who cares? Like,
really?
Terrific. Like, you're picking between two backup at best quarterbacks in the NFL. If you think that Kyle Allen's better than Davis Mills, congratulations, you have a backup quarterback in the NFL. If you think that Davis Mills is better than Kyle Allen, congratulations, you have a backup quarterback in the NFL. It does not matter. Like, neither one of them is going to do anything for an NFL franchise as the starting quarterback. You just hope that they can be a backup in a pinch. You even have Damian Pierce, who was a bright spot for a long period of time, but now because other teams just do not, like, aren't intimidated at all by the passing game of this team, loading the boxes and basically making Damian Pierce a non-factor. We thought we would see progression from Nico Collins, and in some ways we have, but any sort of progression you've gotten from Nico Collins, it's been tenfold negative for Brandon Cooks. And then defensively, you haven't seen Stingley in a couple of weeks. Like, you've had Christian Harris. The talent's better than last year's team. They're just not a better football team, and this is the worst the Texans have ever seen, and it's a very sad and pathetic place to be.
So take the progressions, Jeremy, like we were if we were a starting quarterback, and say, well, we see that there's talent on this roster with the younger players. There's just not enough of it. But to your point, when you see the fact that there's no continuity, there's no ability to gel together as a unit offensively, defensively, or even special teams, then you have to turn the page and go, now we need to start focus on the coaching. Now we need to start to focus on the other parts of the locker room that are really making this the mockery that it has become this season. And again, we head then to the head coach, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, which happens to be the head coach, and then their boss, Nick Caseria. And you start looking at them and saying, okay, if not all them, then you. And if it's you, then you need to really start taking a hard look based on what you want to do in the offseason leading into a next season when you don't want another debacle like this. Are they capable of being able to carry the torch over into next season and control and keep this locker room together and show continuity to do things off, you know, as units on the field? Because if the answer is no, I'm sorry, I realize it's a really hard look to go from one head coach to another head coach to another head coach, but you might have to consider that if the wheels keep falling off.
They might be putting you in a spot where you have no choice. Now, I couldn't care less about, like, the camaraderie in the locker room,
about
the
that.
Continuity.
I'm talking about on the field.
I mean,
on the field continuity, your offensive line.
Everything needs to change.
Right, but I'm saying continuity wise, with the right coaching, your offensive line comes together as a unit, right? You know how to block, you know your schemes, you know where you're supposed to be on certain plays on the field. It looks like it's all in disarray.
Yesterday, they were trying to block Chubb with a tight end.
It's
like people are blaming the offensive line, saying the offensive line is bad. And look, the offensive line has had some issues. They've also had some bright spots. Laramie Tunsil's been great this year. Tytus Howard's been pretty good. Kenyon Green's been up and down. And Lovie Smith yesterday saying that they wanted to play him sporadically. Like, I think he was playing two series and then off a series, something like that. The center and the right guard spots have been whatever for this team. They haven't been very good. They need to improve there. But whenever you're scheming blocking one of their best pass rushers, a dude that's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL with a tight end, I'm not blaming the offensive line, man. Sorry, I'm not. But that's where this organization's at. Like, it's just, not only is it bad, but it's not aligned across the board. I think that's why you have a more talented team this year that's playing worse, is because at least last year, as much of a circus as it was, because I think those are your two teams when you look at maybe even, you know, 2013 when you won two games, maybe 2005, two games, 2002, your expansion year. I think those are the years that are in the conversation when you have, is this the worst Texans team ever? And would love to get your insight. 713-780-ESPN and your thoughts. 713-780-3776. Last year's team was less talented than this year's team, but I think that as crazy as it is to say this, and as incompetent as David Culley was, the team was, like, more aligned. Like, they were playing more competitive games. They won four, obviously, which it looks like is going to be three more than the 2022 Houston Texans win. Like, it's bad, but it's a combination of everything. Bad roster, bad coaching, bad game planning. No one really cares. You're throwing a two-point conversion to Laremy Tunsil in the second half of this game. Like, you're begging for the punchlines. You're begging for the jokes. You're down late. You are down 30-0 at halftime. You have a chance to get back into the game, which they went for two, like, for some stupid reason.
Yeah,
they don't care.
I'm
not going to care. Twice, which the second time they had to, but why are you doing it the first time? And then the second time they do it, they threw it to Laremy Tunsil like they're up 30, not down by 30.
Have you seen his hands? No, I haven't.
It was crazy.
I mean, you look at it and say your quarterback for the other team put up a game's worth of numbers in the first half. The scoreboard was almost running out of juice because it just kept clicking up numbers and positives for the Dolphins. And you're going, they're sitting down half their starters by the time the third quarter started because they know they're already done with you. They're on to the next game. That's how bad you played. And yet there are people wondering about, you know, where changes need to be made or what they need to do. It's so bad top to bottom. Not one change here or there, including the quarterback position, was going to change anything to make any kind of a difference.
713-780-ESPN. This is the worst Texans team ever, right? Do you disagree? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. Also, like, the problem isn't that they're losing, but also, like, they're dysfunctional on top of that. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Worst team in Texans history, right? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 0925 goes one further. I'll say it again, worst team in NFL history. Brendan's saying, hold my beer. He's saying, hold my alcoholic sparkling water.
They are really bad. And if you wanted to make the case that at this point in time they're playing like the worst team in NFL history, I would be open to it. But let's not forget, at the start of the season, they were playing everybody close. Like,
if anybody should know the worst teams in NFL history, you are the expert.
The Lions had an 0-16. The Browns had an 0-16 team. I do think the Texans belong in the conversation of worst teams of all time, but yeah, they are not the worst team.
I don't think they're the worst team ever. I do think that in the course of history that they probably belong in the conversation. Now, if you're looking at their own history, 21 years, I don't know how you put another team in front and below this one.
See, I don't know that you can put them in the conversation because they have a win and a half. And could have had more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas those teams that did the offer, I mean, you got to work really hard and be really, really bad to never have a chance to win one game in a full 16-game schedule.
Beyond that offer season, if I remember correctly, I think the Browns won zero the season after they won one. Like, I think the Browns won one game in two seasons.
I thought that the only 0-16 straight through was Detroit.
No, Cleveland's done it as well.
Okay. That was with Hugh Jackson, right?
Yeah, in Cleveland, yes.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But in Detroit had like a 4 or 5 game stretch before their 0-16 and like another 5 or 6 after that. They went like 20-plus consecutive games without a win.
That shouldn't count, though.
If you're not entirely.
If you're looking at the worst team in NFL history, I think you can only look at that season in a
vacuum. I think there's more carryover from season to season than you do. That's just like a fundamental difference that we have in how we see football.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there's stretches on both ends, it's representative of just how
bad
that
team
is. But
I think that when we look at analytics these days, how deep we can go in, you look at the victory margin of all the teams that beat the worst teams. If you were never in a close game, if you were never in a one-score game, like we were talking about all the teams that have had success this year, and wasn't it like the Seahawks or the Giants that have been in like all these one-score games and found a way to win? If you're on the opposite, you found a way to lose, but that's the definition of embrace the suck. You're competitive, but you lose. But if you're getting your doors blasted off every single week like some of those teams did, now you're basically putting yourself in the conversation.
See, I think that's where the Texans have like kind of went backwards. Like, they've been losing games all year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they had the tie start of the year. They beat the Jags, whatever. But like early in the year, they were playing these one possession games. Should have beat Denver. Should have beat Chicago. Chargers was a 10-point game. But lately, like, you're down 30-0 at the half.
Yep.
Like, you got your brakes blown off you by halftime. And this whole Lovie Smith, we played hard in the second half, and we almost made it a one possession. Like, it was 30-0 at halftime, and they were wondering whether to bench Tua, like, at the start of the third quarter.
They sure were.
The Dolphins kind of let you in that game a little bit with how they handled the early third quarter. The Commanders blew you out. You got beat by 13 against the Commanders, couldn't move the football. It's the way that it's been happening. Blake says, we have the single-season pick-six record. Should we go for the fumble 6 record. If we can't win, might as well get famous. Yes, this is the worst Texans team that I have seen. That's from Blake. 2027, 0-26 Bucks. I guess Tampa Bay did lose 26 back with the creamsicle jerseys.
Yeah, I think that's maybe. Right. That's right.
Like
yeah, that's John McKay's teams, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
When he had the Gilligan hat that he used to wear on the sidelines. Yeah, I think you're right. That was the dreamsicle teams. But when you were mentioning that in terms of how they lose as opposed to just that they lose. And I think that's the biggest key here is the fact that you're not embarrassed when you lose a game that you were in it with the Denver Broncos, no matter how bad the Broncos turned out to be, because you were in the game. You could stay, like we were talking about at the start of the show, you could stay watching that game. It was a debacle between both teams trying to score, but you were in the game. When you watch this Miami game, you could have turned it off 2.5 minutes in. Against Washington, 2.5 minutes in, you drop a pick, you give up a pick six, and you go, oh my God, it's going on again. Yeah. And now you go from that to the Miami game and go right away with the clicker in your hand going, Red Zone Channel, where are you to save my Sunday again? Because this is going to end badly.
Yeah, not great. 6761, what happened to embracing the suck? How can you expect more from this franchise when they're beyond competent from the very top? It's a clown show. Here's the embrace the suck thing, like it's gone past that. From where the Texans are. Because I think I think it's what we talked about just a second ago. First half of the year, everything's working out perfectly. You know, last year you had a couple of, you know, where you laid a couple of eggs. But last year you were a little bit more competitive than you've been this year. I know Cully was incompetent, but at least they were playing hard.
But I laid it out from this time we started Embrace the Suck. And I said the ideal Embrace the Suck formula, be competitive, just find a way to lose late.
Sure, but I mean, that's asking for a... That's like the
it is,
exact
but,
way that you
but
want
it was
to happen.
Happening in a lot
yeah.
of cases.
Look, I also think that we pride ourselves on being realistic, where there's a lot of people right now that are like, oh, how could the Texans be this bad? We were telling you the Texans were probably going to be this bad.
Before the season started, we set the table for you.
We were telling you that Pep Hamilton doesn't have a great track record as the offensive coordinator. You expecting Pep Hamilton to come in here and all of a sudden turn Davis Mills into a top 15 quarterback... probably was not going to happen. We were banging on Lovie Smith's hire the very next day, while people were saying that he won this press conference and the Texans have a real leader and they have a real coach and that, you know, the Texans are going to look more competent and less like a clown show. We were saying, you sure? Lovie Smith hadn't had a winning season in the NFL in a decade. And people now are looking back at that being like, oh man, the Texans totally, you know, messed up that hire. And they're talking about moving on from Lovie Smith after a single season. Whereas many people were throwing a celebration and a parade the day when Lovie Smith was hired. We're like, this is what we're celebrating? This is the lows we've allowed ourselves to go to as an NFL football city? Where we're celebrating a dude who hasn't had a winning season in the NFL in a decade? Where we're celebrating a mediocre third-round quarterback who should be a backup? People thought he should be in the top 10. That we're celebrating an afterthought offensive coordinator that was fired mid-season as an offensive coordinator. We were allowing ourselves as a city to celebrate those things. That's how low we've gotten.
One of the biggest differences is the Mills Mafia was so strong and had so many receipts to cash in on so many different people that everybody believed this kid is going to turn into something great. Just watch. And then the more we watched, the more we realized what we had said all along, which was don't set your standards too high and be careful what you wish for or think you're seeing because you're not seeing enough. But yet, even though people started falling off the Mills bandwagon from week to week when we were keeping the scorecard and showing you he was losing games week after week by his play, there were still people holding out hope. Now that you've made the quarterback change, you know the inevitable finally happened, that even though we believe that it shouldn't have happened, but it even got worse with the guy you put in Kyle Allen, that now those people are completely and firmly on, oh my God, this is so bad, I don't know if I can take it, as opposed to, hey, with Mills and these young kids they drafted, I like this team. I like where it's going. I'll watch. Now you can't even watch.
713-780-ESPN. Unless you're rooting for it. Unless that you're pulling for utter chaos, which part of me is. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Mark, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how y'all bees doing, man? Y'all know good and well, man, with your eyes, man. We ain't got no talent, man.
That's true.
And the talent we got, man, is rookies. You know, the game we watching yesterday, Miami, man, look at there. Tyreek Hill, Tua, come on, man. We can draft Anthony Richardson from Florida or Caleb Williams and get us a D-tackle Weeks and Stars and stuff, man. Y'all lay off Lovey, man. Lovey, man, just working with what he got. I'll take that out there.
Thanks. I don't think Mark's wrong. Like, I feel bad for Lovey. Like, I said what I said about Lovey, and I stand by that. I mean, the guy hasn't had a winning season in the NFL in about a decade. I think that he is I said last week a bottom third coach in the NFL. That might have been very nice. That might have been conservative. I do think that Lovie Smith is playing chess with a bunch of pawns. I do feel bad that Lovie Smith is being forced to sit there and go talk to the media after games on Sunday, Monday press conference, Wednesday, Friday, what, four or five times a week he's having to talk about this lousy football team and having to answer these hard questions, and Nick Caserio's forcing him to have a positive spin whenever he's talking about this organization. Quite honestly, I feel bad for Lovie Smith. I really do. I know he's being paid handsomely. I know he's getting compensated just fine, and I shouldn't feel bad for him, but he's getting upset. He's getting visibly frustrated. He hates talking positive about this team, but he's forced to talk positive about this team, because what can he say? I have the worst roster in the NFL, guys. What do you want me to tell you? Because that's what he's feeling in the inside, but he can't say it.
But you know, the other thing is the reason why I said he's crumbling, he's cracking, because you can tell when the pressure cooker gets to be too much. That's when he starts lashing out. That's when coaches start doing things like lashing out at the media multiple weeks in a row, like showing the frustration of knowing, as much as we say we don't read the clippings and we don't see what people are writing, we see and hear everything. And we know that the fingers are being pointed at us now. And when Lovey's taking the heat and having the fingers pointed at him, I think that's exactly why they made a quarterback change, because he felt too much pressure from the media and he read it and saw it too much from the fan base. And I feel like he made the change to succumb to the pressure that he was feeling from the outside world instead of sticking to the plan that they had inside those four walls and saying, we are going to do what we said we are going to do and roll with this kid the entire season.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Will, you're in the high with the Killer Bees.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Will sounds like a robot. Sorry, Will. Get the robot stuff figured out. You're on a cricket. We'll get it. We'll get you on.
Call
next
back,
time.
Will, when you get a better connection.
The Anthony Richardson thing that Mark said, the Florida kid,
yeah,
don't love his accuracy. Incredible tools. Don't love him at the next level. Caleb Williams, you'd have to wait a year. He's not draft eligible. The USC quarterback, you'd have to wait a season. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Straight Trash Homie, presented by Vivia Dumpster Rentals. We could go the rest of the show with Vivia. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Clean up on all five.
Now that this week's game is in the books, let's do some cleaning up.
I want you to clean it up.
I want trash back!
Clean it up.
It's Straight Trash, homie, with the Killer Bees. Brought to you by Vivia Dumpster Rentals.
Man, where do we begin? Flankers, why don't you make the tough decision of leading us off? Because there's so many things to get to.
I'll pick up where we left off as we open the show, and that is that as much as from week to week we take positions and position groups and individual players, it now gets on the coaches more so than ever before, because from a coaching staff perspective, every single position group on the field was outplayed, and every single position group on the field looked like they were overmatched, and they didn't. And getting back to what I was talking about in terms of cohesiveness and chemistry, the offensive line had nothing. They didn't know what the hell they were doing or trying to do or having followed. There wasn't a plan to follow, it didn't look like. And even if there was, it didn't look like they had any chance of being able to connect the dots and fill in the blanks. So I will say with the coaching staff, the fact that Lovey is spending more time and energy blurting out and reacting to the media than he is coaching this football team, and that each position group and the coordinators have failed miserably and are failing worse than they've ever failed since they've put on a red, white, and blue pullover.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure that you can expect much, one, from Lovey Smith, D.C. He hasn't shown he can be a good D.C. in a long time. He got promoted last year to D.C. from D.C. to head coach when he had the 31st worst defense in the NFL, and they're really bad again this year. He also, like the Pep Hamilton side of it too, I don't expect, like, the best defensive coordinator in the world isn't going to stop Jaylen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Tua, whenever you have the defense that they have, and you also had an injury. Derek Stingley wasn't even there. So there's like no chance. There's no chance that defense is going to slow down that offense. There's not a chance for Pep Hamilton's offense, Kyle Allen, what they have, to try to score on that Miami Dolphin defense. To me, it's the stuff that's going on where it's just like, what are they doing? I mentioned earlier, trying to block Chubb with a tight end. What are you doing? Like, that's setting yourself up for failure. Throwing the two-point conversion to Laremy Tunsil because he's back in Miami whenever you're down by 18 points in that game. Like, that's something you do when you're up 14 points.
But I'm also looking at, though, when I say that, though, like, guys are already making business decisions. And then also, like, when they're in a zone, some of the guys don't know where they're supposed to be in the secondary in a zone. And they're actually looking to the sidelines for help. That's where I'm pointing it to the coaching, going, if you're going to play zone, then what are you practicing all week to get these guys ready to know where they're supposed to be?
I understand that. I think that you're right. I believe that to be true. But even if you execute the zone to perfection with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle,
the talent on the other side of the ball is better. I get that.
You give up 27 points in the first half instead of 30. I mean, you're right. You're right. I just don't think that they have a chance. And, like, whenever you're in the rebuild, you can expect poor play. You can expect to be beat most times, almost every single Sunday. The Texans have done that this year, with the exception of twice, a tie and a win. You know that you're getting into that with a rebuild. To me, it's all like the clown show stuff on top of it. The dysfunction on top of it that you're starting to see with this organization is frustrating.
But your head coach is your front man, too. So your head coach is the guy that's supposed to stay strong with his coaching staff. Just say, we're not talking about that anymore. Shut those things down. But when you show cracks in your armor and you start crumbling in front of the media and you start showing how visibly frustrated you are and you're melting down, that's a sign that there's a lot more going on than we're even seeing. And that's a bad look as the coaching staff look to their leader and see that he's basically folding.
I can't argue with you. I mean, you're right. You're right. I thought Brooks Kabina's questioning was kind of silly. Like, he asked the same thing like three different times. Okay, well, why do you think that you were progressing in the second half? And I can understand why Lovey would get annoyed with that. I thought the questions were stupid, to be quite honest with you. Like, Brian T. Smith last week. Totally understand, got all of it. Yep. I tip my cap to you, Brian T. When Brooks Kabina is asking, well, why were you so positive with the second half three or four different ways? I can understand why you would get mad at that. That said, you're right. You can't. You can't show those cracks.
You and I have been in a press conference just to know, you know what you do? Next question. I already answered that. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you're done. But when you show your, you know, you're cracking by responding and getting emotional, now, of course, I'm going to come at you with the same kind of questioning again, because now I got you. Now you might give me the quote that I'm looking for to make my story a headline.
Yeah, both things can be true. I think Brooks' questions were bad. I think the way Lovie Smith handled it, again, right? I mean, it's the second week in a row where he has showed those cracks. Kyle Allen, go Cougs. That first interception that he threw, quite literally, like we were just talking, the Houston Texans, is this the worst team that they've had in franchise history? We say yes. That interception that he threw has to be one of the worst passes in the NFL that I've ever seen in my life. Like, you have the Mark Sanchez button fumble. Look, I love Kyle Allen. And he looked better in the second half. Go get him. The Mark Sanchez butt fumble. We've seen terrible interceptions in this franchise. We lived through Matt Schaub throwing a pick six like every single game. We've lived through Davis Mills. That Kyle Allen interception that he threw in the first half was one of the worst throws I've ever seen in my life. Really bad.
I think that was the definition when you talk about Caserio saying, hold my beer. You thought Mills was bad. I can do you one better. Because I didn't think it could get worse than what we saw out of Davis Mills staring down receivers and making bad reads and throws. But you're right. I mean, it's right up there where you go, that's an NFL quarterback making that decision and that. What the hell's going on?
That was a bad pass. Now, he didn't look better in the second half, but a bad pass. What you got?
I would say the fact that and I hate to do this, but your second first round pick in Kenyon Green looks like he is digressing on a weekly basis. And the fact that basically he had to be pulled, the fact that they are, I think they're scratching their own heads. And again, it goes back to, again, from coaching to everything else, looking at a kid that you took with first round talent that you used a first round pick on and watching him basically wilt in front of you because nothing is going his way. I don't know what coaching he is getting or isn't getting, but he certainly isn't making the progress when you say, I draft this kid in the first round. He's going to make some mistakes. He's also going to show why we drafted him in the first round. And he's going to get, you know, by the end of the season, he's going to be better. He's not going to be better being used and playing the way he's playing.
He's not developed. A lot of that, I mean, you don't know how much of it is on him, how much of it is on the coaching that he's getting. Both right now are failing, it's fair to say. I would say even the way that it was communicated, how they were handling Kenyon Green, kind of makes the Texans look bad as well. Because Kenyon Green played two series and then came out. And then he was alternating series. He ended up playing like two-thirds of the game. So he was playing about two of every three series yesterday offensively. But whenever he got yanked in that third series, everybody's like, what did he do to get benched? I know he's been lousy in the past, but the previous two series, he didn't do anything wrong. And now all of a sudden, he's yanked out of a game. Like, it opens yourself up to questioning where, you know, you had that Friday press conference. Or we all know that people leak stuff through the media.
Yep.
Hey, Kenyon Green has been struggling. We're going to alternate him series. That way you don't have to deal with that line of questioning whenever you see it on Sunday and you're like, what is that?
Leaked stuff through the media. What are you talking about? The Texans announced on Thursday what we knew on Tuesday, and that was that Davis Mills was benched.
That was so weird, their whole handle. That's another thing that belongs on Straight Trash, Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. Look, we don't like Brandon Cooks here, right? Like, the way that he handled the trade deadline, the subtle tweets. He's a, you know, Easterby guy, all of that. Brandon Cooks, though, has also been dropping some truth bombs about the Houston Texans. Maybe because he is disgruntled, but sometimes the truth comes out when you are disgruntled. Brandon Cooks, through Aaron Wilson yesterday, said after the game, said it was evident offensively that the Texans were not competitive with the Dolphins immediately. From the moment we came out, I'm talking from an offensive standpoint, the moment we stepped out there, that's the truth, that's the facts. He would go on to say, when you're sitting there 1-9-1, whatever you want to call it, it's embarrassing, Cook said. It's disappointing. Disappointing for the fans, disappointing for all the work we put in. Like, I know we don't like Brandon Cooks, but Cooks is being very honest. Maybe Cooks will be his nickname. He's being very honest with where this offense is at. We've heard Davis Mills throw shade at Pep Hamilton. Brandon Cooks flat out just came out and said that we weren't ready to play against Miami. That is a bad, bad look for the offensive coordinator, Pep Hamilton.
And that's, again, where I go back to the coaching. And it's position groups, it's coordinators, it's the head coach. Everybody looks like the pressure's gotten to be too much. And the fact is that when you look at a guy that was putting his resume out there, for as much as Davis Mills was or Lovie Smith was or anybody else was, to prove that they should have a job either here or elsewhere next year and going forward, he's failing miserably. And we always said, look, you got to have enough pieces that you trust so that when you call plays, you know they can execute them. And maybe he's not calling those plays because he doesn't think that the guys that he has out there are good enough to execute them. For whatever the reason, then as a coordinator, you should call something else that you think might be effective because you know the talent you have. That isn't happening. It's not happening across the board. It's embarrassing to watch. And again, when you're at this point in the regular season and it looks like you're just playing week one, the way you are disorganized and you're dysfunctional and you're not able to do anything positively to gain yardage, it's on you too.
Texans look better last year under Kelly. They look better offensively
that's
last
rough
year
statement,
under Tim
but
Kelly.
But you're not wrong.
It's a testament to Pep Hamilton. They look better offensively last year under Tim Kelly, and this year they have Damian Pierce. Last year they did not.
They had no running game to speak of a year ago, so there was no balance, so the defensive coordinators coming and could play the Texans knew exactly what they were getting suited up for, and they could just focus on it. You have balance this year, and yet you still are doing even worse than you did a year ago in terms of where your offense is and what you're trying to get in terms of yards and points.
Straight Trash, Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. You want to close us out?
I mean, the easy one for me, too, is just the secondary in general. And granted, you are playing all-world receivers. You're playing really good receivers. But the secondary, missing Stingley. And again, we've been high on Stevie Nelson throughout the year. But to me, the secondary looked disoriented. I talked about the fact if you're going to play zone, then everybody better know you're playing zone and know where you're supposed to be. And the fact that you know as well as everybody in the stadium who they're going to be looking, who's Tua going to be looking for, how you're going to be getting them the football. And yet it looked like you were basically ill-prepared for any pass that was thrown to those two guys, how good they were and what they could do. And that just disturbs me even more. It's on the secondary as well as it's on the coaching.
Straight Trash, Homie, presented by Vavia Dumpster Rentals. If we missed any, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Let's change the conversation just a little bit. A name that should be near the top of the Astros' priority list this offseason. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before you go to the break, that segment, of course, brought to you by Vavia. Vavia wants you to know that they are more than just getting rid of the Straight Trash Homie. They are there at your homie to do what you need to do, getting your trash taken care of no matter what the situation. You're doing some home renovations, and you did everything in terms of getting the right company and the right price, but did you think about getting rid of all the waste that goes with it? And if you didn't think about it, you hope that your actual project manager for the company you went with thought about it. What do I mean? Well, Texas Custom Patios, who advertises with the station, uses Vavia to get all their waste needs taken care of for all their commercial projects. That is a huge indicator. You should look at them, too. We use them for our ESPN golf tournament. Fact of the matter is, getting rid of the waste is half the battle sometimes, because if you have a house and you're doing it with your garage and your attic and different things you're trying to basically do, or maybe you're renovating the kitchen, you realize that if the waste is just left in the driveway and on the yard and it's there for a day or two before someone takes it away, your HOA is going to be on you. You're going to have a bad look with your neighbors. It's going to be awful. Well, that's where Vivia comes in. 10-yard and 15-yard roll-off dumpsters. They're small enough to fit comfortably in your driveway and or your garage, attractive enough to keep the HOAs away, and they can drop it off and pick it up the absolute same day. So essentially, your curb appeal never changes. Everybody looks at it and says, I'm good with that, because they know what they're doing. And it's clean, it's efficient, and you don't have to get your hands dirty because they do it for you. Check them out today. GoVavia.com. That's GoVavia.com. Tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by. They're going to take care of you every step of the way, from commercial project managers to at-home people doing renovations or cleaning up. They will take care of you every single step of the way. Call them. Explain your dumpster needs. They're more than happy to work with you. And like I said, schedule a drop-off in the morning, a pickup at night. No problem ever. 832-699-1555. GoVavia.com.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to the we'll get back to the Texans in a little bit, but for our sanity,
yes,
we gotta mix it up here a little bit.
Let's go with the winner
next 3 hours. Which winner do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about the World Series winner, or do you want to talk about the number one team in the country? The Houston Cougar basketball team.
Either one, because you've got one that's already won it all and one that is in a position to do so by being the number one team in the country. So I'll let you choose, because I'm happy to speak on either one of them.
C-O-U-G-A-R-S. Cougars.
Had their hands full with Kent State. Went down one in the final minute, but found a way to win. Was that more playing to the level of the competition, or was that Kent State came in
white? Didn't play very well offensively. This was probably me getting my karma from calling Chris stupid for saying that the Cougars are bad offensively. They didn't have a good offensive game. Didn't shoot it well. They turned it over 23 times, which was almost double their season high on the year. Their season high was 12 coming into that game. They turned it over 23 times against Kent State. Didn't play well offensively. They'd be the first ones to tell you that, but they won by 5, and now they're the number one team in the country. They also, half the team had the flu last week, apparently.
First time since 1983. I mean, and again, you continue to write the Kelvin Sampson story and check the boxes and say, when you see things that hadn't been done with this program on that campus since 83 and all the other things that he's been able to do since he's been there, it's just the resurrection and the complete just transformation of the Cougs basketball program falls on his shoulders and Tillman Fertitta's help. But it's such a great story. And the fact that it continues, and now with the Final Four here in Houston this year, to be the number one team in the country at a point in time, which tells you they've got a really legit chance to be here at the end and have a chance to play in their own backyard. It's just another chapter in the Cinderella story where you should be so proud. That's the thing that bothers me the most. I understand that for a lot of it, and though I don't, I've seen it happen for too many years. It's just not a college basketball town per se. And maybe that's because there's too many professional teams and too many sports going on. But for whatever the reason, at a certain point, especially when your NBA team sucks and your football team sucks, people need to get on this bandwagon before the tournament starts.
I mean, they've sold out every game to this point, and I think that there's more attention and notoriety than this program has seen since Phi Slamma Jamma in 40 years. So, like, it's true. Like, college basketball isn't large in this city over the history of the last 30, 40 years. But you're starting to trend that way, and selling out every game. There's more and more attention, more and more people want to talk about it. So it's a good time to be a Houston Cougar, obviously number one team in the nation for the first time in 40 years. The other winning team in this city, of course, is the Houston Astros, coming off their second World Series title in 6 years. And a lot of the talk right now is, well, what's going on in the hot stove, right? Winter meetings coming up. What are the Astros going to do? Justin Verlander, you want a bat, you want a first baseman, you want a left field DH, Jose Abreu, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I have a name, an under-the-radar name for you, Blankers,
okay,
that should be near the top of the Astros' priority list. And I'm not saying that it's more priority than Jose Abreu. I'm not saying it's more priority than if you're a believer in Justin Verlander and signing him to a lucrative contract. But an under-the-radar name that I want the Astros to kick the tires on. And if he is your left field DH signing in the offseason, I would be more than happy if it's this name.
So it's not Cody Bellinger?
It's not Cody Bellinger.
Thank you.
Although I have seen Cody Bellinger, according to reports, I think it was John Heyman,
oh, yeah,
that the Astros
teams
are one of 11 yep teams, which I don't put a whole lot of stock in that.
Look, you're not doing your job if you're not kicking the tires on everybody out there just to see what's out there.
Or it's the agent telling him, hey, look, the Astros are in, because there's nothing that moves the needle more than the Astros move the needle.
But hear me out. The reason why I say that is because the GM position is in flux right now anyway. So at least to know that someone is doing their due diligence to reach out to see if that is the case, I would feel better knowing that no stone is going to be left unturned, whether there was bad blood in the past or not. If you would consider us, if you show you can still play, we would consider you at the right price. Just to see what was going on. I like the fact if they're at least inquiring. I don't, by any stretch of the imagination, I don't want Cody Bellinger on the Astros.
No, I don't want Cody Bellinger on the Astros either. I think it's the agent putting the Astros name in there, just like Rizzo put the Astros name in that conversation.
Worked for
Rizzo
him.
Was signed the next day. The Astros strike fear in the hearts of people. No, the under-the-radar name that I have, that I've not seen mentioned with the Astros, have not seen linked to the Astros, haven't seen on a lot of Astro fans and, you know, personalities wish list that should belong on the Astros wish list is Masataka Yoshida from Japan. The reason that I want Masataka Yoshida from Japan is because he's a good hitter. He's a really good hitter. He can fill your left field DH role, whatever Yordan's not playing that day. If Yordan's playing left field that day, all right, fine. Let's go Yoshida the DH. If Yordan's DHing that day, Masataka Yoshida is playing left field. He's got good power, albeit it's in Japan. We don't know how those numbers are going to translate.
There's guys that recently have shown you they can make the transition pretty easily.
Now, he's not that big. He's 5'8", like 180 pounds.
5'8"?
He's kind of like Alex Bregman's size. He's Alex Bregman's size, has a lot of power in Japan. I don't know if the power is going to translate to the American game as much as it, obviously, not as much as it was in Japan, but he fits into the Astros profile as well. He has great batter. He's got a great eye. So he's got great command of the strike zone, great patience. He has a very, very high walk rate. He rarely strikes out on top of that. So he comes over here. He's basically, I think, like a poor man's Michael Brantley, and he's 29 years old.
Okay, but the price tag is going to make a difference.
I don't know if that's that high for him.
If there's a bidding war and you get a couple of teams that really want to get involved in it, then I don't want to, the price matters the most to me. Like, I understand them considering it, especially because they are trying to figure at all times they're balancing their finances, and they're also trying to cut up the pie a certain amount of ways, whether they get Verlander back or not. They're trying to make sure that they cover their quote-unquote bases with first base, left field, DH, all being in the focus, and then worried about secondarily you can look at center field or maybe I think catcher's basically already taken care of. So I think there's other areas that they're looking at and trying to cut up the pie in different ways.
But they need a left field DH.
But they absolutely do, right. So if you think that that's someone that they can consider, I think the price is going to be the bigger thing to me. Because you know Uncle Mike has said he wants to stay here. So as long as he's healthy and he's a locker room guy, he made the speech during the playoffs this last year that everybody kind of said was a big impact on them. He's a steady hitter. You know what you're getting. And you don't know per se what you're getting in taking a guy that's never played in the major leagues and trying to just guess on, hey, that's going to translate to the big leagues. He's going to be able to catch up to the same fastballs and have the same plate discipline as he's had in Japan. I don't know that. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm getting from Brantley if he's healthy.
That's where all those are the risks. All those are the risks because those are the things
that's
that you
hope
that
matters.
Price matters, and also your scouts matter, and mm-hmm. your ability. Like you have to trust your scouts, and your scouts being able to get it right. Siya Suzaki, who came over last year, he's played with the Cubs.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that that Maza, I already forgot his name. That's how bad I want to be the Astros. Masataka Yoshida. They think that Masataka Yoshida, who's the guy I want with the Astros, all 5'8" of them, that he's gonna translate better to Major League Baseball than Suzaki did with the Cubs. Suzaki with the Cubs this past year was a .262 hitter, .327 on base, .742 OPS.
Good defensive outfielder.
Good too. Defensive outfielder. I don't think that my guy is as good of an outfielder as Suzaki. I'm struggling with these Japanese names,
are
man.
Are you sure you want him?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't
Suzaki
know. I mean,
was the one I was talking
about. I think
Granato
wants him because of a game show played in a previous life, but I'm not sure that you want him.
I don't want Suzaki. I want Yoshida. Yoshida's the one who's a free agent. But Suzaki last year came over, played with the Cubs this past season, and was a .770 OPS guy. If we think that my guy, Yoshida, is going to be better than Suzaki, wouldn't you, like, if he's an 800 OPS guy, if he's an 800 OPS guy, you got your left fielder DH. The Astros should be at least kicking the tires on him. And if they signed him, I would be very happy that he was the Astros left fielder DH next to Yordan Alvarez.
The one thing that I know is, look, the Cubs got it right with Suzuki, and he's the kind of guy that when you put him out there, no matter where you put him out there, and I like the fact they mic'd him up during the season too, and the guy's got the right attitude. He's got a positive attitude. He comes ready to play every day. He loves playing the game of baseball. Turned out great for the Cubs when they didn't have hardly anybody that you could actually focus on and get behind and root for. The Astros are a different story. You can't go out and spend a chunk of money on a guy with more question marks than answers and then just hope that he turns out and he can translate from the Japanese game to Major League Baseball and make it as seamlessly as Suzuki did and just go with it. So for me, that would be the biggest concern, is going with someone that's basically been in the major leagues, that been there, done that, and can do it again, as opposed to getting a guy that happens to be in his late 20s that hasn't played Major League Baseball before, spending money that you are going to be kind of, I don't want to say conservative with, but you're going to really watch where you spend on each position that you're in need of, and then spend this money and run the risk that he doesn't pan out. That's where I would be apprehensive.
It's a risk. Now, you're going to spend money on a left fielder DH no matter what. Like, that is your pie. You know what I mean? Like, there's two positions that I want. Left field, DH, first base. So, like, the price, I'm not, like, all that concerned about saving pennies at one of the primary positions that you need in the offseason. It's about whether he hits or not. It is risky. Now, I still probably lean Brantley over Yoshida, but Yoshida's probably a close second for me, maybe even ahead of Benintendi, who was traded. There's not a lot of great corner outfielders like Bellinger we've talked about. Gallo is another one that we've talked about. There's not a lot of great options in the corner outfield. So if they miss out on Brantley, they think that Brantley's not going to be healthy enough. They think Brantley's too old. Masataka Yoshida as a Houston Astro. I would be very intrigued.
A name to very keep an intrigued. Eye on, says Branham.
I don't know. I'm not sure the Astros are in on him. I'm saying they need to be on him.
Ask his agent.
Fit in.
Ask his agent. We'll find out.
Ask his what?
His agent.
Are you saying agent?
Agent. Yeah, ask his agent to find out if the Astros are one of the teams in on him, too.
They should be. Chris is saying, hey, guys, I'm listening. 11% from three is not good offense. I'm glad they won an ugly game. Alabama matchup looking pretty right now. Cougars have three big Saturday matchups in a row coming up. St. Mary's, home for Bama, at Virginia. That's going to be a pretty big one. And then 4488 says, hey, J&J. It's Killer Bees, not Killer J's. Question, what's the Cougars team offensive rank as of November 22nd? I don't know why you're asking November 22nd. I think it's very impressive the number one team in the country is ranked at 148 in offense. That's antiquated thinking right there, 4488. All you're looking at is points per game. You're not looking at offensive efficiency, which the Cougars rank 26th in the nation in. You're looking at points per game. And the reason that the points per game is flawed whenever you're grading and gauging how good an offense is because you're not taking into account possessions. And when the Cougars are forcing the other team to take shots late in the shot clock, it's going to limit the amount of possessions that you get per game. So the Cougars might have 40 possessions per game, score on half of those, which, you know, pretty good offense. Another team might have 70 possessions a game, score less than half of those, but they have more points per game. You can't look at it that way.
No, and look, if there's, again, we just got done talking about the Texans and all the questions we have about the coaching staff. The one thing I don't question is Kelvin Sampson and his coaching, his ability to adapt, his ability to get right what isn't working, his ability defensively to do, because the main thing that people forget about, you can look at the offensive efficiencies and things, but one thing you will find out real quickly is that defensively, he will turn his defense will be so good, it'll turn into easy buckets offensively, and that's a key of any good coach. So that's a big deal. You want to speak about another big deal? We got a text on it, and yeah, I think there's another big deal worth talking about.
Just mention one name that is pretty high on my target list for the Houston Astros. Well, the Astros said, screw your target. We got another name in mind. The Astros are finalizing a deal with a big offensive bat. Who it is, what it means, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.